Today on a very special Rambling About Cars, everyone, and I mean everyone, has a cool car story, and we're going to hear some whoppers today. No joke, I know it's April 1st, no joke, we invited several previous guests back to join us for some pure rambling from the heart, just swapping legendary tales that only car people can do. So wherever you're at, grab a snack, grab a drink, turn up the radio. Because without further ado, it is podcast time. I am Christopher Smith and Mr. Chris Bruce across the way. Why don't you start us off on this cavalcade of special VIP guests we have here today?
Absolutely. So the plan is, and this is our April Fool's episode, but there's no real April Fool here. We thought about it and we wanted to do a slightly different format for this episode. And this isn't the new format for Rambling About Cars. We'll do something different next week. But we thought about it and... like Smith, like you said, everyone has that like story that they tell people about the automotive adventure they've been on, the funny car story they have, whatever. And so we have John Neff and Seth Miersma with us right now, who are both from Motor1.com. And later on this evening, we're planning on having John Fry, who's a returning guest and a fantastic automotive renderist, and also Alanis King, who works for Business Insider and who covers all sorts of motorsport stuff. So, yeah.
It's going to be quite a ride.
What's that? Sorry.
I said it's going to be quite a ride.
It will be quite a ride.
I was going to do the social promo. I was going to step on you and do the social promo, but...
you step all over me, man.
So I don't step all... okay, maybe sometimes. I have to be better on that. John, Seth, thanks for being here. Folks, go to Motor1.com. You can follow our article. It goes up every Friday. You want to follow us over at YouTube, Motor1 Podcast. Like, subscribe, smash every single button you can. Leave comments, especially after this episode, because we have car stories. And like I said, everybody does. So we want to hear yours as well. You can always email us, podcast@motor1.com. You can always comment. But let's get into some stories right now. Now, Mr. Neff, Mr. Miersma, I know you both are just pure veterans when it comes to the automotive journalism world. Which one of you wants to go?
Old is what you're saying. Old.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Did you see the beard I have going here? I'm letting the white come in. I still dye the hair, though.
Yeah, it's true. It's
great. So here's the decision. Miersma, I've got photos for yours that I can share. Neff, okay. I heard a preview of yours before the show, and I'm interested. So who wants to go first?
Well, don't jump up right away, you guys. Okay, Neff.
You want me to go first? Okay.
Neff, you're up.
So I did give you guys a sneak peek, and my story, and first of all, let me preface this by the fact that as I told you guys before we started, I'm a little bit of a odd duck in the industry because I don't go on first drive events and visit exotic locations and drive amazing cars there, which is where I think a lot of great stories come from. I hear those great stories from the editors we work with. So I had to dig a little deeper for mine. And so I'm going back to when I was 20 years old. I think it was, I may have been 19. It was the first summer after my first year of college. And I was working at my then uncle's RV rental company. And
a summer that would set the stage for so much in your life to come, right?
So true. So true.
Young college renting an RV.
Yeah.
As you guys know, movies start, right?
My interests in my latter years have shifted entirely to RVs away from cars. and that's where the seed was planted. My job that summer was to basically wash RVs when they came back from being rented and then go fill them up with gas. That's all I did, was wash the exteriors of RVs. And there was another kid, like an 18-year-old, who was the year before he was going to college. And great kid, and he and I worked together all summer long. And near the end of the summer, our boss, who was my uncle's partner, he wanted to reward us. So he said, look, we just booked a rental with the band 98 Degrees of Nick Lachey fame. The Lachey brothers, actually. And the concert that they wanted to rent the RV for was in Cincinnati. So thank you. Yes.
We can't clear that. Don't play music.
Yeah. That was probably CD they were promoting at the time. And they had rented our best RV. It was 40 feet long. It was a bus. It had a fireplace in it. It had a like a fake one, but mm-hmm. it had a huge TV. It was everything. And our job was to drive down, set it up for them, and then kind of be scarce, but be available if they needed anything or anything didn't work. So me and this kid, we drive down this RV, we park it. It was like near a hotel because I remember we stayed in the hotel. And the first day we set it all up for them. We put out the awning and, you know, the fridge is working and everything's fine. And the band's not there. So we're hanging out in the RV. And I guess we're not really supposed to do that because we're like the help and they rented it for their space. So the manager comes along and sees us in the RV and just starts yelling at us. Because, you know, we're not supposed to be there. We're peons. We're, you know, whatever. And by that time, there was like a spread of lunch meat that someone had brought to put on the table. They had like set it up for them. There was drinks in the fridge and everything. So we're like, you know, we're like, okay, that's fine. We started walking out. Just then the band arrives. Turns out the band is totally cool. They're like, hey, you guys can come in and hang with us, whatever. And we could tell the manager is super pissed that they unknowingly have violated his admonishment of us. So they invite us onto the bus. There's a Nintendo 64 set up. We're playing games. I think it was Mario Kart. We're just totally chilling with 98 degrees. Really hoping.
Did they ask what you were doing there?
They knew we were with the RV. I'm using a lot of air quotes. I don't know why. They knew we were with it. Thank you. They knew we were with the RV, and I don't know. They were just like, you know, we were chill, and they were only going to be there for like 2 or 3 hours or something. And we decided we really wanted to see Jessica Simpson because we were pretty sure that it was like a hometown concert because I think they're from Cincinnati.
Nick Lachey is from the Cincinnati area. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And he was married to Jessica Simpson at the time.
Okay. So
this is
I've been to Nick Lachey's bar in Cincinnati, actually. I haven't seen him there.
Wait. Bar? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Dude, that guy's like an entrepreneur now.
Listening to Jewel at this time, so I have no idea.
Oh, man. I would have loved to have done a Jewel concert. That would have been awesome. But this was before they were famous for like reality TV and all that. They were just regular famous for being pop stars. We hung out with them and it was super cool. And so we had to go to, like, they weren't going to sleep in it or anything, but we weren't allowed to sleep in it. So we had to go to the hotel to sleep. We get a call at like 1 a.m. from somebody with their team. And they're like, it's like a monsoon outside and the awning is open and it looks like it's going to break if you guys care. So of course we cared. We would get in trouble if it broke. So we run down and it is literally a monsoon. It is pouring rain and super high winds. For whatever reason, I don't remember why we couldn't put the awning up right then. I think it had already bent. So we decided our only course of action was to attach ourselves to the awning, to grab it and just hold it and just be weights. So we are two stupid 19 and 20 year olds and we
holding the awning for the rental RV for 98 degrees in the middle of a rainstorm.
I think we were there for hours. It was a super long time before the storm let up enough that we could like jam the awning back enough to where it would, you know, wouldn't fly open again. And then, so this whole experience comes to an end. And as we're driving back home, we're talking and we both realized like, A, we never really said we liked 98 degrees. And B, this was like a lot of work and it was over a weekend. And we're like, this was not a gift to us at all from our, like, he told us this was a gift. He totally tricked us. Like, we're like, this is kind of like, aside from meeting four kind of nice guys and playing Nintendo with them, I could have done without everything else.
So a clarification and a couple of questions. First off, clarification, the dealer is in the Cleveland area. You're driving down to Cincinnati. That's like a 3.5 hour drive, right?
Oh, that's like four. That's more than three. It's a long drive. But back then, if you were within driving distance, we would deliver the RV anywhere and be there for you. And that actually, it turned into a big business for my family's RV rental company is renting RVs to production shoots and stuff. And that's what you would do. You'd drive the RV there, sit with it for the day while the talent used it, and then go home. My dad met LeBron James, Shaquille O'Neal, and a bunch of other people who were shooting commercials in and around Cleveland when those guys were on the Cavs. So it turned into kind of a nice little side hustle for the RV rental business. But it kind of kicked off with this very weird 98 Degrees rental in Cincinnati.
And so I got to ask, did you ever see Jessica Simpson, since that's what you were there for?
No. And honestly, if we had, I think the drive back would have been totally different conversations of like, that was totally worth it. Totally worth it. Instead, it was just like, yeah, again, four nice dudes who invited us to play Nintendo. You know, I could have done that at home, but whatever.
So I've got to chime in here really quick because, believe it or not, I might actually have a related 98 Degrees, just a really brief story.
Really? This is bizarre.
Is this like 6 degrees of 98 Degrees?
It could be. So flash forward to, I think it was 2012 or 2013. I'm in mid-Michigan. In my other life, as a marketing communications person at a wood chipper company, and doing pretty well. And of course, my wife and I are both from the 80s. She learns that New Kids on the Block and 98 Degrees are doing this tour thing, and they're playing a casino in Mount Pleasant. So she's like, I want to get tickets. And I was like, will you go with? She's like, will you go with me? I'm like, okay. And to be honest, I mean, it was a good show. But they actually, New Kids on the Block were actually louder than Motley Crue that was there like a few weeks prior. So it was a decent show. But she got like the tickets, like not, you know, nosebleed in the back, like, you know, she can see up their freaking noses. So
like you're getting their sweat on you.
So I mean, it was kind of pricey. So I'm like, well, if you're going to do this, then I'm going to get an 03 SVT Cobra convertible.
Oh, my God.
And I did.
A hell of a negotiation.
And I did.
For the tickets, thousands of dollars.
So that was the trade. So that was
the April Fool's part, right? The connective tissue between those two things feels very thin to me.
We were talking about the car prior to the show, but then we went to the show. And New Kids on the Block, they were doing their thing. They're like, fellas, we see out there. We know that, hey, you won. The girls with you won. But we're her first love, and the girls are clapping, and there was a woman next to me. She was like, "Oh my God, you so earned getting that car right now."
Wow!
just for listening,
I feel like only Donnie Wahlberg said that.
I think it was. So hey, the Cobra that the concert sealed the deal. So thank you, 98 Degrees.
Yeah, 98 Degrees for a Cobra is a pretty good trade.
Well done. Okay. Do you guys just want to pivot to telling stories about 98 Degrees? Like, I can tell you about.
Oh my God. Do you have one too?
No, I don't. All I did was watch the reality show, and I don't even remember when, and I don't have any significant stories about it. I probably, I don't even want to say what I was
any,
doing.
Any other pop bands from the 90s?
I can tell you. So we've got a minute here, so I can do the story in a minute. The greatest concert. Do you guys remember Girl Talk, who did like mashups of rap and 70s music? I saw Girl Talk in a bar that held like 100 people. And it turned out that the girl I went with knew his brother, or the girl I went with, Girl Talk, knew her brother. And was like really cool with us. And I talked to him before the show. It's the greatest concert I've ever been to. Just a small room, everyone moving around. It was a fantastic event.
I saw.
Would you drive to the show?
Oh, that's I walked question. There because I was in college.
Damn it. I saw Oasis play in a high school auditorium.
Oasis? Whoa,
really? Yeah. Where? Wow.
Lakewood, Ohio. I don't know why they played the Lakewood High School auditorium.
Are you sure it was the
last year?
Last year.
No, it was like 97 or 98 or something. And
that was like their high point.
It was a really nice auditorium. It wasn't like a gym.
That didn't actually happen.
It was like the auditorium for musicals and plays and stuff dedicated to that. So it could seat like 1,000.
It was still a Cleveland area high school. Like this was, they could have played someone else.
That didn't happen. You're confusing that with a movie PCU where George Clinton plays at a frat house.
Great movie. that a Jeremy Piven joint. Great movie. Great callback. But yeah, no, I don't know why they were there. And what did I drive? I was probably driving
RV, right?
No. I was probably driving
a Winnebago.
A 1982 or 83 Toyota Celica GT, kind of year before it became the Supra. Yeah, and it had fat wheel arches and louvers on the back. It was red. I know
that car. That's hot, man. That's a good car.
It was of the cars I owned in high school. It cost like, I think, $1,300 to buy. The engine was a four-cylinder and it was so smooth. Mm-hmm. It was the coolest car I had owned up until I was like 37. it was that good. But yeah, the car was cooler than the concert for sure.
Well, and you also had, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you have a Dodge Challenger? Not the first gen, the unknown second gen.
Not the third gen, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I was it a Challenger or a Charger? Because I had the one that was basically a front-wheel drive shitbox.
That's the Charger. The Challenger's the Mitsubishi Charger.
I had the Charger then. And
I thought you had the Challenger, which
it was the worst car I ever owned because it was a hand-me-down that came down from two older brothers. During my tenure with it, which didn't last over a year, the seat back of the passenger seat just broke. It just fell limp backwards. And my friend I drove to school just had to engage his ab muscles while we drove to school for a month. And then in the course of 1 week, it popped two tires. And on the second pop, I got out of the car, walked 20 yards ahead and grabbed what I thought was just like a snowball. And I threw it at the car, but it was a chunk of ice or rock or something. It was freezing out. It hit the grill and basically shattered it. And I was I'm done with this car. I'm only like 17, but I know enough that this is just an awful ownership experience. I gave it back to one of my older brothers and he drove it unmercifully into the ground. It had a horrible death, and I moved on from that car.
A horrible death.
Its name was Roger.
Okay.
And all I can remember is it got that name because the paint on the hood and the clear coat had peeled, so it had turned that white color that paint does when it, you know, when it fades away. So we all thought it looked like a distinguished gentleman with a streak of white hair. And very so we nice. Called it. So we called it Roger. But F that car. I hate that car.
We have a new guest here with us. Welcome, John Fry. You can see here it's Chris Bruce and Chris Smith, the regular hosts of Rambling About Cars. We have Seth Miersma and John Neff. John is the global managing editor of Motor One, and we're happy to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, oh, we'd love having you on.
Hey, John.
That's welcome back, John. Thanks for giving this crazy ramble a second go. And thanks for taking a little bit of time today. I know you're a busy guy. I know you were just trying to get in there at the last second. So we appreciate you joining.
Yeah,
perfect. Neff just told us a story about renting an RV to the band 98 Degrees. They were a boy band in the late 90s. They were kind of the third tier below Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. But it was a great story.
That's being generous.
But you played Nintendo with them. Come on.
I think there was one or two more tiers between them and the big guns. But you missed a thriller of a tale.
Yeah, bands and touring vehicles of various sorts are the source of a lot of dramatic stories. I mean, you got the Black Sabbath or Ozzy Osbourne accident, and then the Dave Matthews sewage spill.
Oh, yeah, that one's famous.
Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. 98 Degrees, their tier is that they didn't have a tour bus. They rented a motorhome from my family's business, and we drove it down from Cleveland to Cincinnati. So that was the tier that 98 Degrees was on.
Right. How many people are in 98 Degrees?
Four. Two brothers.
Five? Four, five? Something like that.
Four.
But I still got
it. I should know.
Of course, you're the expert.
It's probably better than not even being the headline band, but the opening band at the Soaring Eagle Casino in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Many, many years later.
I think 98 Degrees claim to fame, besides Nick Lachey and Jessica Simpson, is that one of their members was the oldest looking person ever in a famous boy band.
The oldest, youngest man in the world.
Yeah, and no offense to him. He's a wonderful singer and looked like a great guy. But he was full on middle-aged balding at the time. And it's like, I think you got your marketing message a little mixed up for the audience. They're not looking for that.
Little makeup, little hair dye.
Yeah.
Well,
Mountain Camp disease or something like that. Like, there was never a young version of him.
Yeah, exactly. I think he always looked that grizzled way.
Version.
Real quick here, I'm gonna have to zoom this in. It's the guy on the right, right?
It's the one with the hat. Yeah, he's balding. So it's the one with the hat. And look, I'm 42. I'm not gonna make fun of anybody who has thinning hair. But we're the kind of people who don't get called to be in boy bands.
Well, when you have to stand next to the sun, that is Nick Lachey, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's different.
Look at that. Look at that.
Difficult. Handsome man. Handsome man, Nick Lachey.
He's like the proto Taylor Lautner.
I think we're trending a little bit away from cool car stories.
We are.
Let's go from one John to another.
Another John.
Mr. John Fry, you're just an incredibly talented artist. If you didn't catch our podcast from a few weeks back, John was on talking about some of the things that he's put up on his Instagram, some of his great works of art. But John, you have an interesting car story for us today. If I'm understanding correctly, can you share that with us?
Yeah, I wanted to share an image with you.
Okay, yeah.
And I want you guys to all look at it. And if you know what it is, don't say what it is. We'll try to see if everybody's on the same page.
Okay,
we're going to have a little bit of a guessing game here.
Yep. You're going to press share there at the bottom, and then share screen, and then window or Chrome tab. Okay. And I, since I'm an admin, I will be the one doing that.
And this makes me a little nervous because if anybody has gone to John's Instagram, Frywork on Instagram, he has a lot of images that he can choose from.
I like the obscure stuff.
We do too.
We do as well. And I'll be honest, I'm a bit nervous right now. I don't know what to
do. Nervous. I'm curious.
Excited.
Nervous because I can't stand being wrong. And that happens because I'm wrong constantly.
So share.
Like, I should be used to it by now.
And then share screen.
All right.
And then you can share. You see there's three tabs, share entire screen, window, or Chrome tab. So I don't know what it is you want to share, but pick that one, and I will add it to the stream for all our YouTube listeners.
Here it comes now.
I see it.
And what are we looking at here?
Wow, what is that?
Okay, so for those not watching on YouTube, go to YouTube, Motor One Podcast on YouTube. But for those that can, I understand. We are looking at, I need to adjust my glasses here. That's a green front engine race.
It's blue.
Is it blue?
Yeah, it's kind of a classical bluish metallic, just like.
Okay, well, maybe I'm colorblind as well as Ron all the time. But it's a blue. It looks kind of green on my screen. It's kind of a bluish race car. Looks like we got carburetor stacks out the hood.
Got velocity stacks.
You know, just a bubble roof. It looks like something from the 60s, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's like a Daytona Spider that someone who had never seen a Daytona Spider drew.
Yeah, see, it's like outsider art for car racing or something. And the roof is bizarre.
Wild, yeah.
So, yeah, I came across these, I don't know, on some message board years ago and was just fascinated with them, especially because the cars in this race series all have this similar kind of roof treatment and they all have front engines. So nobody knows what it is, right?
Absolutely not.
It looks like it has wheels from like a 1980s IROC Camaro, though.
Yeah, so this is what we call Argentina sports prototype.
An Argentina sports prototype.
Wow, John, I love having you on because you got the coolest ideas of stuff.
Whoa. Look at this guy here.
That's the original clown shoe right there.
And it's hard to find pics of them as well. Here's the heavy with this paint scheme.
So it's a wild. It's like a single seat in the center, and the roof. I mean the roof is only like 2 or 3 feet wide, and then it flays out into the body.
Right. It's almost like a 30 streamliner, but interpreted through the 60s. It's
no, it looks like it's from Speed Racer. Or
it totally does. You're right. Yeah. It totally
and,
does.
Reutemann, Carlos Reutemann, the F1 driver, he was in this series early on, apparently.
Wow.
So some people came out of there. So Argentina has somewhat of a race history with Fangio, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can figure out is I think they had a height, minimum height requirement at some point. That's why they had the odd roof. Treatment, and then also there's a requirement for front engine, but there are some mid-engine cars. This is kind of a beauty. It's a little bit thin, but it's pretty nicely proportioned.
Totally. That page you're looking at, that can you click on the blue car that's on the left with the huge wing, but looks like I don't know what it looks like.
And this is a racing series in Argentina from back in the day.
Yeah.
I never heard of this. These are some of the weirdest / coolest cars I've seen in a while.
Totally.
Yeah, and I've been kind of poking around trying to find more information about it, but I haven't found a whole lot.
I think we might be able to help you because we recently launched Motor One Argentina, and we have a couple of guys down there who work on a site.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we can hook you up with them to see if they've heard about this or can unearth any more information on the ground there.
So I'll sell you one. Would you like? Are you interested in buying one? Can we put you in a sports car today, John?
I need get a longer garage.
Yeah.
But
I would have a diecast, like an 18 scale of them or something.
They're absolutely striking, though, because it's like this weird mashup of stuff from the 60s, but then stuff from pre-war, but then stuff from the aerodynamic era.
And there was some weird stuff that was behind the Iron Curtain, some Soviet racing series that was open wheel in the 70s, and the cars looked really, really sketchy. But it looked like they were looking at pictures of F1 cars from the 60s. Everything was about 10 to 15 years behind. And
I think that's how they made all their machinery.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's stuff that pops up every once in a while. It's like, I've never seen that before. And, you know, I've been on the planet for many decades looking at car books, looking at car sites day in, day out. And something will pop up. It's like, how have I never seen that before? And I don't know if I'm just getting old and I'm forgetting. But it's just like, that is a totally amazing. How can that have existed? And I haven't found
it. Well, I mean, that's a good point. I know, I mean, we will get comments and articles, various things from time to time. How could you not know about this? And and after a while, it's just like you start to think, yeah, I've seen it all. And then something pops up to remind you, nope.
I had that experience. I had that experience recently when I discovered I just looked it up again, the SMZ cycle car, which was a small car in Russia that had no foot pedals. It was all, you could control it by your hands. And in Soviet Russia, it was given for free to disabled people so that they could drive, people who were injured in war and didn't have the use of their legs or something. And they, of course, they were horrible cars, but I thought it was just so cool that they had a version of universal healthcare that gave cars to disabled people to use for free. And now they're kind of collected and if any of them survived. But I was like, how have I grown up and never heard of this car? And again, we have a Motor One Russia, so I asked them about it. And they're like, they're like, oh yeah, we'll you'll see some of those rotting in fields every once in a while, and see them around.
We're looking at it now on YouTube.
The SMZ cycle car.
Yep.
Well, that that's like a car. I don't mean to sound surprised, but I mean, I'm picturing, okay, what's it going to be like a little PLP 50 or something?
No, it's going to be a car.
That's a legit car.
Soviet standards, it's up there. It looks solid.
And it had this cool paddle mechanism for braking and accelerating on the steering wheel. So it was like technologically innovative for the time as well. And I'm like, cool. I'm like, I want the U.S. to build a disabled car and hand it out to people. Like, that'd be a sweet. Like,
I'm sure they made a car from scratch that didn't retrofit a Trabant or.
They could have. I mean, there was so much of that going around then.
Yeah.
Then and there. But it looks original. Yeah.
So, John, we were talking about cars from behind the Iron Curtain, and I know this has been brought up. So two of the people I work with all the time, Angel and Adrian, one of us from Bulgaria, one is from Romania, but they have referenced this. This is the Melkus. This is from East Germany. And
that's kind of gorgeous.
Yeah, it was the East German race car. Essentially, like if you were kind of high up in East Germany, this is what you could take racing. It uses like a 1.3 liter engine. Like it is not a fast vehicle. It just looks really cool. But
could it outrun bullets or the SS? I mean, could you get away?
It could outrun a Trabant, and that's probably about it.
Yeah. Well, that's all you need.
It also looks like it maybe shares
front engine.
It's got to be mid-engine, right?
It's mid-engine, I'm pretty sure.
It's so low down. I mean, you can tell that the wheels are tiny, and then the hood is super low too. So it's got to be back there.
There are not a lot of opens and closes on those gold wing doors either. I could barely see the struts that are controlling those, but they don't look robust to me. This is like DeLorean minus.
You jam your AK-47 in there to keep the door
just
up.
Just hold it.
Yeah,
human power.
So I just looked it up. It is a 3-cylinder, 2-stroke, 1-liter engine. So
a 2-stroke. Yeah. Wow,
that's all you need.
It's a 2-stroke.
My lawnmower doesn't need more.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So there's Saabs that were kind of a similar engine.
Yeah, 2-stroke Saabs. Yeah, but I was curious, John. You personally, you showed us something I'm really interested in. Now I want to look at our weird Argentinian cars. You personally, have you had any interesting experiences in cars, like adventures, something like that, that you've been on?
Let me see. I mean,
sorry to put you on the spot.
I've driven a lot of really interesting cars through my career. We've had cars to test out and drive around LA that were not American cars. So, unusual things like the Citroen, what was that? Not the Picasso. It was like a big van. Cactus? It was a van and the whole roof came open.
Oh, I don't know which one that is.
Yeah,
not a Berlingo.
No, it was big.
Wow.
Yeah, the smart roadster was kind of fun. So some of these cars, like, they're really good for like Mulholland or something. Honda Beat was absolutely fantastic. Mm. Yeah, I got a lot of.
Oh, tell me about driving a Honda Beat, because that's one that's definitely on my list of wanting to own someday.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to some friends about cars we've driven over our the many years, and what's very interesting to me is remembering the feel of everything, like the feel of the shifter, the feel of the steering, the weight of the shift after so many years and being so familiar with that. And it's weird that it gets ingrained in your head. But the Beat is, of course, it's a K size car, mid engine, teeny tiny. I'm not a big guy, but if I would reach over to the passenger side, I could touch the outside of the passenger door. It had a zebra stripe interior, and it wasn't made for freeways, so you got really, really buzzy. But once you got on a road like Mulholland or like Pacific Crest Highway or whatever, it was just perfect. And I was driving it one night, late at night in the dark, coming up the backside of Palos Verdes Peninsula. There's some neat roads up there. And I came around the corner and, you know, a tight corner going too fast. But the headlights illuminated two cats sitting in the road facing each other. And I had like to make a decision.
House cats or like?
Yeah, house cats.
Large, okay, sorry, because I know in that area there are bigger cats.
I think you came upon a fight about to break out. I think that's what happened there.
But the way that the car was waiting, I wasn't going to make any, you know, sharp turns or brake or anything. Mm-hmm. I had to be very, very quick and make a decision on what I was going to do. And basically both of them went opposite direction and I went in between them.
Oh, my God. That was dramatic. I thought you were going to have to choose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, choose. It's like, yeah, like play God choice.
With your, yeah, play God with your Honda Beat.
I had a friend that was driving around there, and it was a similar experience about, you know, coming around a bend or coming over a hill or something, and his headlights illuminated a monkey in the middle of the road.
Wait,
and
what?
And he said that was absolutely terrifying because it looked like a little alien or something. So I don't know what rich movie star's house
I was
from,
I was driving on a straight road once, and my headlights illuminated a cat. But I was going perfectly straight at like 50 miles an hour. There was no reaction time. And I had a bunch of my, it was in high school, I had a bunch of my friends in the car. We all screamed, heard a thump, and we just kept going. And we screamed for the next 5 minutes.
Oh, no.
Oh, you God, John. That,
John.
I
way to bring that mood down.
I had precious cargo of my own in the car. I couldn't swerve. It was just like, this is going to happen. And we thought, look, either we're going to like skim its hair by a centimeter, or there's going to be contact. And there unfortunately was contact.
So. Well, let me raise the mood a little bit higher with my quick animal story. This is a bit of South Dakota life. I'm driving with a bunch of Mustangs, I'll admit. It's like 11 p.m. We're going down the highway on a midnight run out to the South Dakota Badlands. There is nobody on Interstate 90. It is black. It is empty. It is dark. I'm in the lead. I don't know why they let me lead. That's a stupid, ridiculous idea. You never, ever let me lead a car cruise. And I'm just busting down the highway, and I got my high beams on, and I come over a hill. And just at about the limit of my lights, and we're doing, well, the speed limit's 80 miles an hour out here in this part of South Dakota, so we're doing at least 80 miles an hour.
You're doing 90. Let's not lie.
The speedometer was actually reading 110, but I never. Hold on.
It's a Mustang. So.
I never changed the gear. I never changed the speedometer gear in the transmission when I did the rear end gear. So it always reads. That's a little Mustang trick for people that don't know. We always lie about the speed, and that's how we get there. Anyways, at the very range of my headlights, I see a deer standing in the left lane. Now, ordinarily, you think deer in the road, ooh, you know, brakes, take action. My initial thought was, oh, he's far enough away. He sees me.
No, he doesn't.
But actually, he did. And after like a second, it's like, wait a minute, it doesn't matter. It's a deer. So I, you know, hit the brakes, slow down. We move over. The deer casually walks off the road. I swear, all of my deer encounters out here, they're along the side of the road. They look up. They see you. They move away. They don't run
smart
away.
Smart deer
they,
out there.
So maybe smart deer. But I didn't just say, "Oh, I'm gonna have to hit him."
Well, they didn't. He didn't run because it's a Mustang. So you know, he knew he
had a million years of evolution. They haven't figured out cars yet. That's a new thing that hasn't been put into their genetics yet to pass that information down. They don't calculate something that fast moving that speed. I've heard plenty of stories of deer hitting the sides of cars. Like
that
they can't figure out something moving that fast approaching them. I guess
their eyes aren't really, they don't have like the depth perception perhaps with the spacing and direction of their eyes to figure out the mental calculation of speed of an object coming towards me.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
I was in my early teens, like I was probably 12, 13. My dad was driving down just a normal road that he drove down every day to get home from work. He saw a deer, didn't really think anything of it, smashed into the back end of his Jeep Wrangler. Like he didn't hit it. It hit him and then it walked away.
Those are my favorite, when the car is stationary and the animal just plows into it.
Oh no, he was driving. The deer still hit him. And the deer was like, well, I'm fine, and kept going. But yeah.
Wow. All right, Seth, you got to go now. We got to hear your animal story.
Before Seth jumps in, we have to welcome Miss Alanis King to the podcast.
She can't hear us yet, can she?
Oh, I can hear you. Hello. Okay, cool. Here's me and my cat.
Oh, man.
Speaking of animals.
Thank God your cat wasn't around for the last couple stories.
Oh, my God.
That
would have been really tragic.
Trauma.
Oh, yeah. Neff and his stories. Thank you very much, Alanis, for coming back and joining this crazy cavalcade of car chatter.
I know you have limited time, so we are going to let you go next.
Ooh, but yeah,
we've had a story. What have been our stories? We've had... I'm sure you're familiar with the band 98 Degrees. John Neff told us about experience with the band. John Fry told us about driving a Honda Beat. And that's kind of where we are. And we just can share random stories.
John also educated us on the racing series of Argentina.
Argentina, he did.
Absolutely fascinating cars. And at some point, John, I would like to ask you if those cars influenced any of the artwork that you post on your Instagram. Maybe we can get that a little bit later. And Seth, I promise we might be saving the best for last, because Seth has one hell of a cool story that
he needs
to tell us. But Alanis, yeah, thanks for jumping in. Thanks for joining us. Regale us all with, and maybe it's a mistake just giving you an open book.
Last time we looked up a lot of Chris Angel facts.
Last time we had lots of Chris Angel content. Tell us just some crazy, wacky car stories.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I have one story that came to mind because I was thinking about, you know, April Fool's and something that I think back to that still feels like an April Fool's joke. Every time I think about it, I'm like, that's not real. That didn't happen. So I would say it was like 3 years ago or so, I went to the launch, the American launch for the KTM Crossbow Comp R at Sonoma Raceway. Okay. Yes. And there were six of us there. Six of us. That was it. Like, they did not invite many people to this thing. Mm-hmm. So there are six of us there, five dudes and me. Okay. And I know two or three of these dudes, and then it's me. So we all sit down at dinner. It's all guys except for me and this one woman who works at KTM, right? So, and then everybody on the trip who's driving the car, all guys. So I sit next to the woman who works for KTM. We don't look anything alike. We have blonde hair, but it's different shades of blonde. Look nothing alike, right? So I sit down at dinner, this guy across from me, he's going to remain unnamed. Very popular car guy and car broadcaster is sitting across from me. This guy looks at me and he goes, "You know, young lady, this car is a stick. Do you know how to drive stick?" And
groan.
And I'm like, "My man, there are six people here and I'm one of them." So instead of saying, "Actually, this car comes in a stick and a DSG," because it comes in both. Instead of saying that, instead of correcting him, I said, "Why would you ask me that?" And he said, "I'm just curious. I want to make sure you can drive stick. I want to make sure you know what you're doing tomorrow." And I go, "Yeah, I can drive stick." Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Have you ever driven on a racetrack before?" And I was like, "Yep." "Yes, I've driven on a racetrack before. Actually, a few months ago, I competed in a car race at Shanghai International Circuit where they run Formula One." And he goes, "And those cars, were they automatics?" And I was like,
"Wow.
Can I punch this guy?"
Can I just
punch this guy?
It's getting worse.
Please. So, yeah, he asked me if they were automatics. And I was like, "No, they were sticks. Yep, they were sticks. You know, you did that. Yeah, shift it over and then up to get into first. You know, it's got three pedals. You got one all the way on the left. You got to press them. Yeah, this is crazy stuff, my dude. Revolutionary." So I said, "Yeah, they were sticks." Said I haven't been on track since that race because it was actually pretty dangerous. They didn't have Hans devices. They didn't give proper instruction. My translator did not tell me the right things.
I remember reading that article. I remember that.
Yeah. My translator thought the clutch, I think, was the middle pedal. And I was like, okay, this is going well. My translator told me that the lights, because it's Formula One track, and in Formula One, the lights tell you when to go on the standing start grid. So the translator told me that the lights would go off, and then there would be a yellow light telling me to go. Okay, and so this is obviously counterintuitive, because in Formula One and FIA events, when the lights go out, that's when you go. So hence what they say in the Formula One broadcast, it's lights out and away we go. No, they said lights out and a yellow light and away we go. And I was like, that sounds wrong. I'm just going to wait.
But isn't that how it works in America, at least? You see the yellow light and you freaking floor it.
You go, exactly. You see the yellow light and you go. And so I just said, all right, you know what? I'm going to look at what everybody else does and I'm going to do that. So anyway, I was like, yeah, I haven't driven on track since that, because that was a little jarring. It was a little dangerous. He asked me all these questions all night, extremely patronizing, just like, you know, just young lady vibes. Just, oh, young lady, leave me alone, dude. I'm here to work. and so whole night just patronizes me. We spend the whole night talking, hour and a half. Looks me in the eyes the whole time. Doesn't talk to the other woman. Okay. Next morning, I get to breakfast and I sit down. Here he comes. He sits next to me. He goes,
oh, man.
He goes, I hear you race cars. And I was like, I as I told you last night, I have raced cars before and I have not raced cars in a long time. Do you know why he said that? Anybody have a guess as to why he said that, please?
You were the PR person?
He thought I was the PR person. The only woman there. There was one other woman. One other woman. He spent the whole night patronizing me. And then we wake up the next morning and he did not register my face enough to know that it was me he was talking to. He thought I was the other woman.
Alanis, it's probably because you weren't smiling enough.
It's
enough. Yeah. I've heard that before. That can be a problem for some men. He sounds like
what age generation was this guy? Can I distance myself from people?
This guy is an older man who's a very popular personality on automotive videos and races cars. And
can I ask you a very would you describe him as a boomer?
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. That's fine. Yeah, okay.
That's fair.
Oh, I've said who it was before, but he got so upset by me saying it that I was informed that he was physically ill. After he first told me, I've never met you. And I was like, believe me, I know. I know you don't remember me. You didn't remember me then. He said, this lady's on drugs. I've never met her. And I was like, oh, my God.
So yeah, is he a heavy drinker, this clown? Did he smell like hour old scotch the next morning?
Listen, no personal judgments about the man. All I know is that I was informed that after I publicly mentioned this and mentioned who it was, he felt physically ill all day, but he never felt physically ill enough to apologize to me.
Yeah.
Not what a good.
We'll figure out who he is. We'll put his name in the show notes and just go.
There you go. Have fun. Go on a scavenger hunt.
Joining us next on the podcast.
Go on a scavenger hunt. You can figure it out. Come back.
Man. Kick his ass on the track when you were driving the crossbow.
So no, he's a very good track driver. And so this was.
I didn't say if he was good. Did you hit him?
No, I didn't hit him. This was actually one of the things that I actually wanted to leave. I messaged my boss and I said, I don't want to do this. Like, I actually want to go home. I don't want to be around this guy. And what made it worse was the fact that everyone there was very experienced on track. I do a track day twice a year, three times a year. Okay. Like for how much I do on track, I am very good on track. Like if I go to an event, an automotive event, I'm probably going to be in the three fastest people there if there are like 30 people. But I am not these guys' level of experience. Like, these guys are like track day guys. This was a free-for-all event, okay? It was not lead-follow. It was not instruction. It was not here's how to hit the apex. It was you're going to go out in groups of three, because there are six of us, three at a time. We're just going to send you on Sonoma. Have fun. And I was like, the last thing I am going to let happen is the last – I'm not going to let this man pass me. I would rather – hit a wall and light my ass on fire from the engine exploding.
I will sacrifice this vehicle and his vehicle before I'll let that happen.
Yes. Like, I was like, I would rather break my collarbone than let this man catch me on track. And he, no one caught me. No. Nice. Oh, nice. No.
Yes. Yeah. Very good.
I was, woo. And I still think back to that, and I think of how mad. And the man would not stop sitting next to me. I was like, go away. I don't want to talk to you. That was – honestly, I think back to that.
The information you gave us about him only narrows it down for me to, like, 25 people.
Oh, yeah. Like, only, like, 25 people.
Right. Yeah, the number of car bros I could pin that on is pretty high.
Right? Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, if there were only six of us there, you can see who rode the KTM Crossbow Comp R Stores from Sonoma. True. Have fun. There's only one in that age group. Have fun. You figure it out. It was
– okay.
It was a time. And when I look back at it, it still feels like an elaborate April Fool's joke, because I could not believe I woke up that morning and the man mistook me for the one other woman who was there.
Oh. Well, Alanis, I know you have limited time with us. So after that absolutely harrowing story,
thank you.
Please promote the Rich Energy book. I know June, July it comes out, right?
I believe it's going to be about September, October.
I'm sorry. I thought this one was July. Yeah. Okay.
A couple months later. So it's actually in edits right now. And then once it gets back from edits, we will make an index and finalize everything, put it on the pages and print it. So yes, I have written a book, am writing a book. I'm about to publish a book about the Rich Energy Haas Formula One team. If you have watched Drive to Survive on Netflix, or if you've watched Formula One, the real thing, you will recognize it as the black and gold sponsor of that team in 2019. And it did not last very long because everything was a mess. So the book is the story of how it came together and how it so quickly and so publicly and so interestingly fell apart. It'll be out later this year, September or October. You can find out more at richenergybook.com or on my social media accounts. Alanis, A-L-A-N-I-S, in, we got a middle initial, King, K-I-N-G. I couldn't do Alanis King because some man named Alan believes he is royalty.
Alan is.
Yeah. I'm gonna pre-order it on Amazon right now.
Oh, that's so nice. Woo-hoo. Thank you.
And it's perfect timing because even though we have a huge motorsport.com website, mm-hmm. I have never really been into racing until like mm-hmm. the last 2 years when I mm-hmm. did watch the Netflix series.
Uh-huh.
Now my wife and I are obsessed fans and uh-huh. we root against the villains and root for the good guys in this love epic it. Battle of open wheel racing. So
you make it sound like it's WWE.
It really
that
is.
That is exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
It really kind of is. But yeah, that's my book. Really excited about it. It's coming out later this year. I can't wait. I walk around with my Rich Energy book umbrella and people see it and they're like, what's that? And I actually walked around with the Rich Energy book umbrella at the 24 hours of Daytona. And as soon as I popped it out, it wasn't raining. It wasn't anything. It was overcast. But I just wanted to have my umbrella out so people could see it. As soon as I popped it out, we did like a little zipper thing to get into the garage, like the crowds of people. And so like I was coming in from this zipper and Kevin Magnussen, who drove for the Rich Energy Haas F1 team, was coming in from this zipper. The man walked behind me for about 5 minutes with my umbrella popped out. And I bet he had a lot of memories come back.
I can't believe
not all good.
Not all good memories. But now Kevin is back with the Haas Formula One team in a very bizarre sequence of events, and he has scored points twice in a row. So congratulations, Kevin Magnussen.
For sure,
absolutely.
By the way, Alanis, I'm a big fan of yours. I've read your stuff for a while, and I also feel like a kindred spirit because I noticed on your Twitter that you two are a lover of chilies.
Oh, I love chilies! Wow.
I think these three guys here, the two Chris's and Seth, know my history with chilies. When I would drag them to chilies when we would all be at an auto show and they would want to go somewhere fancy.
Chilies with you? Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And every vacation I go on. That's my touchstone. That's my, like, I feel safe.
I feel safe there. Yeah. Exactly. I feel safe at Chili's. And actually, Chili's really likes me too now. Chili's sends me things. They've sent me a necklace that says Chili's in cursive. It's a gold necklace. Like, you know, that they're supposed to say your name. It says Chili's in cursive. And they sent me giant margarita earrings.
Perks of being an
margarita earrings?
Perks of being an influencer, man. I gotta get my Twitter followers up to get to that.
Listen, I am actually having like a battle of the chain restaurants right now. So Chili's sent me a package of stuff and the Chili's necklace. And Cheddar's sent me a Cheddar's blanket. And
what's Cheddar's?
Cheddar's Scratch Kitchen?
That's regional. Yeah, I don't know that.
It's regional.
That must be a regional thing. I've never seen a Cheddar's.
It's a regional thing. And so here's the deal. So Cheddar's sponsors Tyler Reddick in the NASCAR Cup Series. And my household is a big Tyler Reddick household, right? Like short kings forever. We love Tyler Reddick. Big Tyler Reddick household. We have one Cheddar's novelty soda cup with Tyler Reddick on it, right? Because we went to Cheddar's and we were like, hey, can we have the Tyler Reddick soda cup? And they brought us Austin Dillon, who's another cup driver. And we were like, Tyler Reddick. And then they brought us Austin Dillon again. Wow. And then they finally brought us Tyler Reddick. So we had one. And my husband and I, we fight over it, right? So like, he'll take the Tyler Reddick cup and then I'll take the Tyler Reddick cup. And then he'll take the Tyler Reddick cup and I'll take the Tyler Reddick cup. I told this to a friend of mine who writes about racing. I was like, oh yeah, we fight over our Tyler Reddick cup and the Austin Dillon ones just sit in the cabinet. And so he...
You still took the Austin Dillon ones though.
Yeah,
I like that.
They were like, oh yeah, keep them. And so I told him this and he actually had an interview with Tyler Reddick a couple days later. I did not know that. So he's talking to Tyler Reddick and he said, yeah, my friend Alanis fights with her husband over their Tyler Reddick cup. And Tyler Reddick's like, I'm sending her more cups. So Tyler Reddick got Cheddar's to send me Tyler Reddick cups and Cheddar's sent me a blanket and it was 2-day air freight.
Wow.
And a blanket that says Cheddar's on it. And I'm not joking. The blanket's right over there in the closet. Like, it's a whole thing.
NASCAR sponsorship is the best.
It's a whole thing. Like, so those are my stories.
Okay. You're welcome to stick around. We've got about 15 minutes or so left. But
if you have 15
now
minutes
I want to try a Cheddar's.
Listen, if you got 15 minutes left, I guess I could stick around.
Yeah, stick around. I mean, thanks for sharing your story. And also thanks for bringing your talent, your skill, your energy to this world that we all know is just full of toxic masculinity.
Oh, thank you.
You are doing a service to all of us. So thank you very much for sharing the story. Mr. Miersma, can you top that? I mean,
no, I don't know who the hell made me go after Alanis.
I'm so sorry. Oh, wait, do you want more? Oh, God, I've got more stories. Go, Seth, go.
No, I mean, let's do a new storyteller. We can always do this in a few months' time.
I was like, go, Seth, go. I have more stories that just came to me.
I forgot about my NASCAR story. Go ahead, Seth.
All right, so the only thing, there's no segue here. There's no segue.
There isn't.
There's a little bit of so my story. The only relationship between the track story that you told Alanis was the fact that I was in a situation where I was extremely uncomfortable, but for many different reasons than obviously you were. But this was 2013, and I think it was the third year that Subaru was running a kind of really fun boondoggle of taking journalists to the Isle of Man, to the Isle of Man TT, right? So the days and or weekend of, actually, I think it's like a week of motorcycle racing. And the first year they did it, there was some, I mean, basically it was kind of a, I can't remember what I'm allowed to say or not say in terms of swear words here, but it was, you know, it was a show. It was a
PG-13.
PG-13.
No F words.
It was a shit show.
No F words, but S words are okay.
So I was on year three of this program, and I sort of figured, you know, this sounds like an adventure. It sounds like maybe they got the kinks worked out in the first two. Let's go ahead and pull the trigger on it. John, who was my boss at the time, was probably a little bit reluctant to send me because I think that we had gone in the past and not really gotten any content out of it. But I also, somehow...
I'd like to point out that Subaru is probably the most well-known automaker for just, like, having tons of, like, marketing budget left at the end of the year and deciding to put on these boondoggle trips that are just amazing trips that they know they're not going to get, like, tons of press out of. Like, didn't they go to Patagonia once with you? Didn't they take you to,
yes,
to the southern tip of South America?
That's another story. Although I would argue that it's brilliant marketing. I actually think it's, like, that... The Patagonia trip was brilliant marketing. This was too. So here's the relationship though, right? Subaru works with a rally driver named Mark Higgins, who was a British rally champ, champion of the British rally, I think four times or something like that. He drove for Subaru. He's Manx. He's from the Isle of Man. So there was at least like a tenuous connection there. And I think he was the one sort of driving this thing. But the program was actually fly into Ireland, Northern Ireland, fly into Belfast, take BRZs and STIs south to Dublin, hang out for a day, get on a plane, put the cars on a boat, go over to the TT, watch some racing, and then Subaru then these journalists, I think there might have been like six of us, another 10 of us or something, pretty small program. We were going to be this sort of demonstration race in the middle of or between two actual races, with Higgins leading the way and journalists sort of doing kind of a lead follow. Right. All sounded great. So my trip went wrong, like from the very beginning. There was some weather. I couldn't get on the flight. My flight was canceled from the US to Ireland. So I missed the first day entirely, which is important because at this point in my career, I had only had, I think, one or two experiences driving right-hand drive cars. Right. So all of the guys who had gone out on this program, like at least had a day of driving these cars on these crazy, you know, cobblestone, like super narrow Irish roads on, you know, the wrong side of the car, on the wrong side of the street, and kind of getting their feet wet before they were thrown into
public
the
roads
fire.
Worth mentioning. Like these are public roads that just normal people drive on. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, in the first part, for sure, they were just driving. It was just a driving program. They're just going south, you know, to get to Dublin. So I show up a day late. I get to Dublin in kind of the afternoon, get unpacked and basically go to the bar, which was not the smartest move. So I'm at Temple Bar, which is a pretty famous place in Dublin. And it wasn't like a crazy night, but it was crazy. There was enough imbibing that like I didn't feel awesome the next day. Right. And again, like I'm sort of thinking like this will be fun. It'll be an experience, but it's going to be kind of a cream puff of a drive because we're doing this demonstration. So the next day we get on the plane, I'm feeling a little bit hungover. We get up, you know, it's an early flight. We get to the racing venue and I realize, first of all, like, all right, well, this is at least going to be a little bit interesting getting out because all the cars are staged essentially behind the main grandstand. So we've got to like somehow like clear a gigantic crowd of people to even get to the course, right? For those of you guys who don't know or haven't seen it, like the course in question is called the Snæfell Mountain Course. It is almost 40 miles. I think it's 37.7 miles. It's, you know, narrow streets going through little villages all across the Isle of Man. It is hands down. I think Higgins told me at some point, I think there are 200 plus corners on this thing. There's no question it is the most demanding track, most demanding course I've ever heard of, certainly been on in my entire career. And I would argue probably the most, like at least just to memorize, like might be in the top one, two or three most difficult in the entire world. You know, like the guys riding bikes die on this thing all the time because there's crazy elevation change and they're, you know, it's just a completely wild experience. So we get our track briefing and the local organizers are saying like, you know, Higgins is going to be up front, but the first time we did this, Higgins went a little crazy because he's a rally driver and he kind of can't hold himself back. So don't worry. We're going to have We're going to have a local guy in a GTI ahead of the pack and behind the pack. So we'll be able to keep everybody kind of grouped together. And the guy in front is going to keep Higgins at kind of a reasonable pace. More on that in a second. But the
photos that we're seeing, I think, are alluding to what's coming.
Well, there's, yeah, I mean, these photos are one particular sort of terrifying moment. But surely the scariest thing in the world is, like, we're going through the briefing. Again, I'm getting sort of reassured. And then I get into the car and I realize, like, I'm actually feeling a little bit worse than maybe I even thought I was. You know how sometimes, like, the hangover doesn't really kick in for a couple of hours in the afternoon. So I'm feeling a little bit jittery. I'm sitting there. I'm getting in the car. I'm realizing, like, people aren't moving. There's no organization to, like, clear a path for the cars. We're just going to drive through people and drive up onto the street, basically. And so I'm sitting in the car kind of getting used to it. I'm driving first. I have a driving partner, a lovely man and journalist named Nelson Ierson. Nelson, come on the podcast at some point. Who's also, by the way, a much better driver than me, like, overall. And I'm doing the thing that you do when you're like in a new car, when you're a kid, where you're just kind of going first, second, third. You know, you're like trying to, like, remember the pattern because it's all backwards. Like, it's, you know, it's the wrong hand. Like, I'm on the wrong side of the car. I was freaking out. My foot was fluttering so much that I, like, could not keep steady pressure on any of the pedals because my heart was really racing and I was just terrified doing this thing. So, get up onto the course, start driving. The adrenaline kicks in and some experience kicks in, you know, like the lizard brain of that reminds you or that sort of forces you to just drive the car goes. And I'm like, this is okay, right? I'm gonna be okay. I'm gonna live through this. I'm in a BRZ, by the way. Higgins in an STI. Some of the other guys are in STIs. Then we start going, I realize, like, what I found out later was the guy who is supposed to be holding the pace back, the local, well, the locals aren't Mark Higgins. But they're way faster than anybody who's been been around before. So they're like, call them 70% of Mark Higgins, right? And I might be 4% of Mark Higgins on my best day. And I was not having my best day, right? So the pace starts going up and getting crazy. And, like, kind of all the instruction that we had about, like, where we're going, what to look out for, landmarks, things to be careful of, just fly out the window. Also, at the same time, too, like, this is a crowd situation. Like, people are on this, not just on the side of the course, people are walking out into the road in front of the cars to snap photos like you're at a rally, right? So there are children sitting on stone walls, like 8 feet away from the car as we're flying by, as the pace is sort of increasing. And there's this, like, again, pressure just to keep up so I don't get lost or I don't, like, you know, lose the pack or whatever.
Or throw up because you're hungover.
Or throw up. And, it was all going pretty good. Started to get into that flow state. Felt okay. And it was, like, right before this photo, like, it occurred to me, they had one big part of the briefing was you're going to go through a village. You're going to kind of, I think it's come around semi-blind. There's like a church, if I remember correctly, that's sort of blocking your view of this bridge. And you're doing a little bit of a longer, left or right-hander. So when you see the church, slow down. You want to hit the bridge at about 30 miles an hour. At 30 miles an hour, you'll get all four tires off the ground, but you'll be okay. You'll land more or less flat. Well, you know, again, like, I'm flying, or, you know, close to flying at this point, and I hit the bridge at about 50 miles an hour, 55 miles an hour.
Are you really flying at that point?
Got all four wheels off and just, like, came nose down, like, super hard. Like, the car was okay. I mean, the car was drivable after the fact.
It was okay.
But I definitely smashed the shit out of the front end and maybe did a little bit of damage to the radiator. We're not sure. We're not sure.
I hit earlier.
This is the postscript, though, because the reason that we're not sure is because, you know, again, we're talking about, like, a 40 mile race. We weren't doing multiple laps. We switched drivers halfway through, so they arranged this driver change. And so after about 20 miles, I get out, Nelson gets in, and we go for a few miles and go through this actually, like, really tricky but long right hand turn. And it's tricky because there's a stone wall with, like, a white kind of some advertising over it. And something about the advertising really kind of made it difficult to judge how far away the wall was. And Nelson, again, who's a really accomplished driver, he's done a lot of rally, done a lot of, you know, track driving and stuff. was like caught it in time, but he realized, he was like, oh wow, I was much closer to that wall than I thought. It really snuck up on me and caught it. Right after we get past that, like, we get stopped. Everybody in front of us slows down. And again, not naming names, but the people behind us in the SDI who had the exact same problem that we did kind of the exact same thing that Nelson did, only sort of tried to drive through it, just plowed directly into the wall and completely totaled the car. So that was the last time that Subaru ran this event. I don't think that they were invited back to the Isle of Man. They have, again, like, I love Subaru, Dom, Jessica, please don't. It was an amazing program. It was an incredibly intense event, one that I'll never forget. And certainly, you know, a course that if I got a chance to, I'd go back and drive again, hopefully a little bit more sober the night before this time. But
Seth, as your boss at the time, I'm glad I didn't hear that story when you got home. Because you may not have gone on the first drive for a while after that.
I wrote it. It's in the story.
Is it in the story? I don't remember it, but I have a terrible memory.
Doesn't read any of the things we write. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
In Nintendo with 98 degrees.
I just look at the track. That's what it is.
Epic story. And I mean, Isle of Man is no joke. I've never been, but I've certainly seen a lot of races from Isle of Man. And I mean, I like to think I'm pretty brave, if not, you know, just completely ridiculous and without any talent whatsoever. But that, I mean, it's almost scary for me to watch Isle of Man.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, somebody had just, they didn't die, but right before we went off, there's this hill. I think it's called die. Bray Hill.
That time.
People die every race.
Every year they hold the motorcycle race, people die.
And oh, yes.
Yeah. Not necessarily one, like, it's every year.
But I don't know who the rider was, but there was a rider who came down Bray Hill, and Bray Hill is this really steep hill that goes into a steep uphill. And then again, it's like a left or a right hander coming out of it. So like when the bikes go down, the suspension is completely compressed, bottomed out, and then it unloads entirely as you go up the hill. Right. And so if you don't get it just right, if you're not kind of like in the pocket when you're making the turn and getting there, like the bike, you just lose the bike. And that happened, like, we saw this on video again. Well, it might have been after. Now I'm embellishing a little bit, but it felt like before. The bike came down. He lost it a little bit, and the bike exploded away from the rider. It was such force that it actually like came apart and was shrapnel as it was going into the crowd over there, like coming out of the hill. And so, like the experience, like the whole seeing everything, you're just like, this is. That's as close to like real kind of old fashioned racing, you know, like John Fry, we were talking about like the racing in Argentina. I'm sure there are some really gnarly crashes. Like for the most part, that kind of racing has been legislated out of existence, but it still exists, or at least did until very recently, on Isle of Man, where they it's, you know, this kind of like independent state that is like an illegal sort of some kind of like quasi legal. I know it's a British protectorate maybe or something, but they can get away with stuff basically that you can't get away with anywhere else. So very, very strange place, incredible race, insanely dangerous. Love to go back in a car.
Cool.
In a car. Woo.
So we have got roughly three to 4 minutes left. I am the only one who hasn't told a story. Unfortunately, what's that?
So tell us a little something then. Come on.
I'm going to do something super quick here, and it's mostly going to be to embarrass my parents, because, as you know, we had someone drop out, and I was like, I could just have one of my parents drop in because they have cool car stories. We didn't end up doing that, but I can still embarrass them. So here we go. So this is from 2006. I was doing a study abroad trip in Salzburg, Austria. And at the very end of that trip, my parents came to visit me, and we went on a trip to the Nürburgring. We ourselves did not drive around the Nürburgring, and you will be seeing pictures of both my parents here. Look at how happy they look, 2006.
Nice stash. That is quality.
He still has it. So we did not get to drive around it, but my dad and I talked about it beforehand, and we wanted to go around. We were like, we're not going to accept the first person that comes up and asks us if we want to go on a lap with them. We accepted the first person who came up and asked us if we wanted to take a lap with them. So it was in, that's me. You can see damn, I look good there. Yeah, anyway, we were in a Renault Clio Williams, which is the hot hatch version of the Renault Clio at that time. Like I said, I'm so upset. I swore I had pictures of it in this directory, but I can't find it. But yeah, so we took a lap around the Nürburgring. I was in the rear bench seat. My dad was in the front passenger seat, and obviously there was the driver. And I swear to God, it was the fastest I've ever felt in my entire life. I was laughing the entire way around. It was frightening, but wonderful. And it was just the greatest. Like, I wasn't behind the wheel, but it was the greatest automotive experience that I've ever had. And it just so happened, real quick, we were there. So the following weekend was going to be the 24 hours of the Nürburgring. And so the pictures that you're looking at now, if you're looking on YouTube, these are people the week before setting up to be there for the 24 hours of the Nürburgring. And you can see people have scaffolding, people have trucks, like, it's a thing, or at least it was a thing when I was there in 2006. And it is just the greatest automotive memory of my life that, A, my dad and I got to do a lap of the ring, but then just like seeing this, it's like automotive Mardi Gras, or like, that's the best way I can describe it. It's just a fantastic thing. And automotive so,
Mardi Gras? I don't know if I want to go to Mardi Gras with my parents.
My parents fair are point. Cool.
I'll tell you what, though. I think you may have experienced the Nürburgring in the best way possible, which is on a bench seat, because not to feel all the forces and have nothing to keep you in place is probably a great way to feel that track and its turns and elevation changes. I would have taken the bench seat over the passenger seat.
It was great. And real quick, these pictures here. So this is the restaurant Piston Klausa, which Sabina Schmitz, who you've probably heard of if you ever listen to Top Gear or anything like that, she sadly passed away from cancer last year. But this is the restaurant that her family ran. And so we went there while we were there. And you can see I took this. I tried to be artsy, a bunch of lotuses with the restaurant Piston Klausa. And you know, it was a fantastic experience, and it's one of the best automotive experiences that I've ever had. So,
well, that's a very cool story. I mean, everybody's traveled, but me. I mean, I've gone from coast to coast. I remember driving through the Poconos in a Chevy Tahoe, and it was just, I don't know what it was. I mean, the vehicle sucked, but it was just, I mean, it was sunset. I was going through the Poconos. I was trying to get to a hotel. I was supposed to be meeting with customers the next day, and it was just this kind of picturesque kind of Zen moment, if you can imagine, in a Chevy Tahoe. That, or maybe the Badlands at 2 a.m. is,
you've talked about that.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I so love doing that, because that really, it feels like you're driving on the moon, because you're winding through the Badlands. And I imagine if you're in places like, you know, like the Painted Desert in Arizona, I've gone through there as well. If you're there after dark, I have to imagine it's something similar. So all you people have traveled so much.
Well, I think that's going to finish up our show for tonight. So for our special guests, for Alanis and John Fry, people, if they want to follow you, if there's anything you guys want to plug, I want to give you the opportunity to do that. So
like I said, Alanis in King, not Alanis King, because Alan is King. You can find me there. You can also find the Rich Energy book at richenergy.com. I love tweeting, so if you like tweets, you can read mine.
Cool. And John?
Yeah, best way to see my work as it gets put out there on a regular basis is on Instagram. That's Frywerk with an E. Fryewerk. And I will be published hopefully pretty soon this year as well. So that's nice. Kind of a big thing for me. So
yeah,
this year is a big thing. I'm turning 50, and then I've also spent 25 years with my company. So from every day on, I will have spent more than half my life working for the same company.
Wow.
Which is nice. It's a good thing, because I love working there. But,
cool. Yeah, now, let me ask really quick, finding these Argentinian race cars. Has that worked its way into any of your artwork that you've done on Instagram or any of your other artwork?
It all goes into the brain sponge. You know,
I'm going to be looking at that stuff differently now after
totally.
This.
Yeah, I totally glom on to anything that's like unusual and like makes you kind of go ouch a little bit. You know, the comfortable stuff is not so interesting to me. You know, that's too common. So, you know, the Pink Panther show car.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, that proportion, you know, that extremeness is kind of what I like to push for, but it can be done in a good and a bad way. And because that's the difference between like Sbarro and Gandini. You know, they both did a wedge car. The Sbarro car is very awkward. Gandini is just perfect.
I thought you were talking about the pizza for a second.
Yeah. Pizza?
The car company sponsored by a pizza company.
Yeah.
And then Seth, John, is there anything you guys want to promote, your personal stuff or Motor One related stuff?
Yeah,
or whatever,
Motor One. Go visit Motor One.
Go visit Motor One.
Keep us employed.
Exactly.
And right. John, I know you're getting ready to embark on an adventure, so hopefully you'll come back before too long and tell us about some of your new adventures.
Yeah, I'll report from the road and tell you guys what I've been doing. That's going to start pretty soon. So
nice.
Should be cool.
Can't wait to hear it.
Nice. And Seth? For folks who haven't been following too close on Motor One, Seth is you're trying to put out like maybe a bi-weekly or so column.
It seems like it's bi-weekly. I get the impression
from your perspective. And I just want to encourage everybody to go read that because I mean, you are such a talented writer and you mm-hmm. bring something really fresh that we haven't done too much of on Motor One.
Mm-hmm. Your most recent one was driving a bunch of Ford products. You drove the Bronco. You basically tried to drive every Ford you possibly could. Mm-hmm. So
you should totally turn that into a series, like you mentioned it at the bottom of the piece. That would be I totally love the idea in the piece.
It'd be fun to do sort of model or sort of full model lineup reviews. I think that'd be kind of cool. But yeah, every once in a while, I'm kicking out a column. Turns out that the job is requires a lot of a time commitment that doesn't include writing. But I'm working on that. We've got something coming up right now. I'll say it out loud so that I'm forced to do it. But I've got a piece on a watch and a very fast SUV. And then I was just out. In Italy driving something interesting too that's under embargo, so that's going to be a drive review that's coming out. But definitely go to motor1.com every day, all day. Check us out on social media, follow us on Twitter, nice. Subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, download it on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast, etc.
Yep. Well, I was going to do the plug, but Seth plug. Just
he got it for us.
I'm taking a week off. Woohoo!
You're done.
And as always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate every listen, every comment, every everything. You can find us all over the place. Like Seth was saying, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We're on Audible. I literally just found out today because I was searching for something. So if you're on Audible, you can find us there. It turns out. So yeah, we're all over and we love every listener and thank you so much for our guests. Again, Alanis King, John Fry,
thank you.
Seth Miersma, John Neff. Thank you so much, guys. And that'll be it. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.